Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium.
Good evening. This is Michael Norris, along with my co-hosts Jerry Oates and Bobby Simmons. We are back together, all three of us, after a bit of a snafu last week, where I couldn't figure out how to work my telephone to call in and do the shows.
Well, this one, excuse me.
Yeah.
Well, we are all three here this week for the first time in a while, I guess. Unfortunately, this will be the only week against for a while, because next week I will be off because of me dealing with the circus and everything. But we're going to have a great show tonight. We're going to be joined by a very special guest, a gentleman that the three of us are very familiar with, and I'm sure a lot of fans, especially that grew up in the Southeast, are familiar with. He was started as a ring announcer for the old Lee Fields Gulf Coast promotion, and then was the lead announcer and voice of Southeastern Championship Wrestling in the late 70s, early 80s, and also the voice and commentator for Continental Championship Wrestling in the mid 80s, Charlie Platt. And, I am really looking forward to doing the show, and Charlie seems to be excited about it too. What, you guys moving furniture or something?
Who, me? Brother.
What's that?
My wife's oxygen cord got caught under something here. I was having to do some rearranging. Our lifeline.
You had your foot on it. That's what it was.
No, I actually had it. I had it crimped up in half in my hand, and she caught me. So.
Oh, you're a braver man than I am, young man.
Oh no, she's. We've had some doctor appointments today. She's doing pretty good. We're having some lung issues right now, so we don't mess with the oxygen.
I understand that. Well, speaking of doctors and hospitals, our friend Ronnie West is currently residing in room 615 of West Florida Hospital. Pensacola, Florida, due to some blood sugar and diabetes issues.
I'm sorry to hear that.
He got real sick over the weekend. I was in Pensacola. The two of us were supposed to get with Roberto Soto and Bill Bowman and go have lunch. And Ronnie was so sick he couldn't join us. And then Roberto went over to check on him on Monday, and the people at the hotel told him he'd gone to the hospital. Spent a couple of days in ICU, but they got everything determining what's going on, and he's now in a room. And as Roberto said, he's doing much better because he's chasing all the nurses, and they were flirting with the nurses. I said, well, he'll do that till I throw dirt in his face. So
that might have been Soto doing that.
No. His brother, maybe, but not Roberto.
You're right. I'm going to the hospital next month.
What's that?
I said I'm going in the hospital next month.
For what?
Had both my knees replaced.
Ooh.
Are you really? You gonna bite the bullet, Bubba?
I got to, man.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. I mean, you know. See, it's like I tell people all the time. People go, oh, ain't nothing to it. They do it every day. See, it depends on which side of the knife you're on as to, you know.
Exactly.
But everybody that I've had any contact with has had that done. So they have. The only complaint I've ever heard is they wish they had done it quicker.
Well, I wanted to wait as long as I could, and that's what I've done.
Yeah.
I went to them last Wednesday, and told them, I said, I've gone as far as I can go, and he said, yeah, you go on as far as you can go. He said, you know, I had options, which I've had every option there is. And So I told him I wanted them both done at the same time. He said I was a perfect candidate for it. So
I was. Do they recommend doing both of them at the same time, or is it better to do them one at a time?
He said, you know, if I weighed 300 pounds, he wouldn't suggest it. But he said, you know, you're in good shape, you work out, and so I'm on. I told him, I said, that's the only way I want to do it, both of them. You know, if I go through all that rehab twice, you know, do it one time. So I got to have it done. It's awful, man. It's just awful.
Well, tell the people down at Tybee Island that we have the perfect temporary replacement for you while you're out of commission. We'll send Charlie Smith down there to patrol the beaches for you.
Yeah. Get over like a fat rat.
Let me tell you what our friend Charlie is doing. He came up with a bright idea here about 3 weeks ago. He saw a poster or read the paper where the fair was coming to Gwinnett County, which is the county he lives in. And he said, you know, he said, there's people have tables and stuff set up at those fairs. He said, I think I'm going to see what I can do with that. So he went up there and bought a permit or a table on the midway under a tent or in a building or something. I'm not sure where he's at. It cost him $400. So it broke down to $40 a day. For 10 days. He told me day before yesterday, he said he made his money back in the first 15 minutes he was there.
I believe it.
And he's been there every day for the last 6 days or 7 days, and it runs through Sunday. So
he'll make more than the fair will.
Listen, he said the tax man came by and laid a slip on his chair, you know, saying, hey, you got to pay taxes on whatever you take in, blah, blah, blah. Charlie says, well, at least I get first count.
You always did. What do you
guarantee that? $60 in claim 60.
I figure time he leaves that a tax man will owe him.
Oh, jeez.
What's he selling?
Hats. But one of the things he's selling is masks.
Yeah,
so he got hooked up with somebody in Mexico that is making masks down there, and he's buying them from the guy down there. I don't know how many he buys at a time, but I think he's selling them for $20 a pop, and they're like what Rey Mysterio wears or what Mil Mascaras wears, and I was talking to Randy yesterday, and he had called Randy yesterday, and he told Randy, said some woman walked up and looked at the table. She goes, oh, look, that's like Rey Mysterio wears. I'll take six of them.
Oh, come on. I guarantee you Charlie's got about 8 cents apiece on them, knowing him.
I don't know what he's got in him, but he's doing all right.
Much more than I think he and Joe Turner went in together, and they're getting them for like 90 cents apiece. I may be wrong on that, but that seems like the figure I heard was 90 cents apiece. I think the guy's paying the shipping himself.
Oh, yeah, the guy paid the shipping, too. They didn't have to pay for the shipping. I remember him telling me that. But, you know, the funny thing is I could buy 100 of them, and 2 years from now I'd have 95 of them left.
Tell me the truth, Bobby. You sound just like me.
Oh.
Oh, me. Well, a little bit of bad news, which I always hate to share, but we lost a good friend of Bobby and I. Jerry, I don't know if you were ever around him much or not when you were working for Lee Fields, but Don Fields, the middle brother.
Yeah, he was down there when I was there.
He passed away day before yesterday, and he's been sick for quite a while, and has been in basically what was a hospice in Grand Bay for a couple of years now. But I did find out some information. His visitation will be tomorrow, the 21st of September, which is Friday, from 1 to 2 at Serenity Gardens, which is is on Old Pascagoula Road, 8951 Old Pascagoula Road in Theodore. And then after that, they're going to take him over to Baldwin County to Jubilee Cemetery on Highway 27. He's going to be buried next to Lee and Bobby, which is befitting. But I never was around Lee much, and what I was around him, he was very straightforward, businesslike. And Bobby was very quiet and very reserved. But Don had the personality of the family. Don was always cutting up, just a joy to be around. He'd never met a stranger. Everybody was, you know, he treated everybody like gold and was just a wonderful guy. And I tell you what, I hated he's not been around for the reunions for the last couple of years, and I really am going to miss him because he was a wonderful guy.
I told when the news broke about that, well, you had called me and told me, and then I seen Bill Moody or Percy Pringle or Paul Bear, however people know him, posted on Facebook that, you know, that Don had passed away. And I posted a little blurb back to him. You know, it's a shame. The people today that I think wrestling is so great now, it's a shame that they will never, ever, ever get to see and appreciate the work that those three brothers did. It's like Ted and Jerry working together. They were, you know, they were so, those two, they were so polished that, you know, I mean, you just, they were natural together. And it was the same thing with Bobby and Don and Lee. I mean, it was just, we talk about this a lot, but here's three guys down there that they worked in front of the same people week after week after week after week, man, and drew houses week after week after week because people believed what they were selling.
Was he the youngest?
No, he was the middle.
Bobby was the youngest, wasn't he?
Bobby was the youngest, yes.
Yeah.
And Don's career, people say it was cut short, and in a way it was, but he actually worked in 12 years because he started 1950, 51, somewhere in there, and his career was ended due to a car wreck in 1963, his in-ring career, I should say. He still helped with promotion, helped Lee run the promotion, and helped Bobby and Kelly and Speedy Atfield run Mississippi when they reopened Mississippi in the late 60s. But was just a very personal guy. He was always around, and just, even though he was no longer active in the business, he had a very good mind for the business. Was successful as a promoter as well.
Well, on a happier note, Jerry Lawler is back home in Memphis and seems to be doing well after quite a scare.
That's a lucky man.
Yes, he is.
Blessed man, yes. I should say.
Yeah, he attributed, I told Bo James when I was talking to him one day last week, I said, you know, the good Lord hopefully has got Jerry's attention now, and he will reevaluate, you know, and I'm not saying he's doing anything wrong, but he'll evaluate his priorities. But I read where Jerry attributed the doctor that Vince has there at the matches was saving his life. They said because of the CPR that they administered almost immediately and kept it going, that's probably the reason he didn't have any brain damage.
Amazing.
Yeah, he could run through Bo. He was down about 16, 17 minutes with no pulse.
Yeah. And he can imagine what would have taken place had he been working on some little Indy card in Tupelo, Mississippi or somewhere. You know? Not that he wouldn't have gotten care, but it would not have been as immediate as that is. And speaking of Bo James, we want to throw a shout-out to our friend and president of the Bo James Concession Company, Bo James.
Yeah, he sent me a little text message just before we went on the air. He's at the same building that he was at 3-4 weeks ago, and he rented the ring to the guy, and he went up there, and the guy still don't have a concession stand, so I think he was on the way to the dollar store to stock his concession stand.
He needs to get him one of those little things on a bicycle like Flash Monroe used to have.
Oh, jeez.
Right.
Rocket told a story one time about Flash City. Said he had some kind of truck. He was selling, you know, concessions out of. Said he parked it on the bridge there in Pensacola where everybody fishes. And Rocket said he paid some guy to act like a health inspector to go up and throw a badge on him. And said Flash told the guy, said, "Well, I got to go up here in the front and get something." Said he went up, got in the front, started the engine, drove off with a guy standing there.
How in the world did those two last together for 10-12 years?
They're both gone now. I'll say this, you know, there was a time there they didn't really like each other. I mean, they didn't, and I used to laugh at Rocket. You know, he'd kind of figure out ways to get him and do things to him, and it was, you know, it was funny.
Until he tormented poor old foot. I'm going to take a quick commercial break. When we get back, we'll get Charlie on the line with us and see where the conversation takes us. So take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Hi, I'm Jody Peterman. We know that no one understands what you need better than you do. We take care to guide you through the legal process, ensuring that you're able to make the decisions that are best for you. If you have a personal injury, criminal, or family law issue, please take a look at our website to learn more about our practice. We offer a free initial consultation for personal injury cases. Give us a call at 229-375-5680. We have a reputation for being accessible and treating our clients well. We look forward to hearing from you.
Hello, I'm Guy Terry of Terry and Peterman. At Terry and Peterman, we're committed to representing the hardworking residents of South Georgia in personal injury, criminal, and family law matters. For years, we have worked with college students in this area to ensure legal issues do not disrupt their academic careers. We also represent military families struggling with divorce and family law issues. We rely upon over 30 years of combined experience to provide aggressive representation for our clients.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling at the Academy Theater in Avondale State. We're also at the Masquerade every month or so. Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Championship Wrestling. And you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling. We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
Up our Georgia music to Walk This Way.
I was wondering what that was. I thought it was a commercial.
Trying to get Mr. Platt on the line with us real quick. As long since I've worked the switchboard, I'm not sure I remember how. You're going to take over this job for me.
Who?
You computer set. That'll give you something to do while you're laying up in the hospital recovering from your
insurance. Oh, look.
Hello. Charlie Platt.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. It's Michael Norris, Jerry Oates, and Bobby Simmons. Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium. How are you doing this evening?
Thank you, man. Great to be along with you, and great to be. I had a chance to see you recently, but I'd like to see what Jerry Oates looks like now at the age of 83.
I may just come down there and show you what I look like.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing very good, Charlie.
Great to hear your voice. And
haven't seen you in
Simmons,
years, man.
Also good to be along with you, my friend. It's been some time. I guess one of the last reunions is the last time I looked at you, I guess.
Yep, last time we seen each other was there in Mobile. How are you, Charlie?
Doing good. Doing very, very blessed to be able to be with you guys.
We're tickled to have you tonight.
Yes, we are.
Tell me, Jerry, what year, you know, I'm blessed to be with you guys going through what we did with open heart surgery back in the middle of May, and the doctor's reports that I shouldn't have lived through it, but we did. But I was also blessed to be able to watch heroes of mine on TV when I was a kid growing up in Southeast Alabama, and then later in life getting to work with them. And Jerry Oates was a big time wrestler as far as we were concerned in the Wiregrass area of Southeast Alabama, because, man, you know, it's one thing to see wrestling out of Dothan, but when you could pick up that Columbus TV station and see Jerry and Ted Oates and Bill Dromo wrestling 1 and 2, that was the big league, man. And what you started around 1970, is that right?
That's correct, yes.
And you were big time to us down here. And then about 76, I got to start working in the business here in Dothan, and you made several shots down this way.
I sure did.
Had a good run, and you know, a lot of people that might be listening in don't know that you and I were, we call this the garden spot of the world, guys that worked in the business for years. If you got on in the Georgia territory or the Pensacola Mobile territory, it was hard to get the guys out, so you had the same crew in there for year after year after year.
Yeah, people don't realize what a great area that was down there. I really enjoyed it. Wrestling in that Farmson in Dothan, there was no place like that building. It was unique unto itself, and I enjoyed every time I was down there.
And most times when you were down there, Jerry, you know, in the 70s, and you go back when I was a kid watching it back in the 60s and things like that, the place was full about every Friday or Saturday night.
Oh, there's no doubt about that.
And when you look at the population of the community, the city of Dothan, and take it in, per capita, Dothan, Alabama was probably the hottest wrestling town in the United States during the 1960s and 70s. Would you pretty much agree with that?
I don't doubt that at all, Charlie. You know, it was like no other place. You know, it had that atmosphere, and it was just a fun place to go, and always good talent there. The talent was there. The fans were great. It was just a unique place.
In the late 1970s down here, Hulk Hogan got his first big push down here, and I happened to be a part of it, and it was unbelievable seeing the transformation of the business from the 70s into the 80s time period, and things, as far as I'm concerned, got way out of hand promotion-wise, and I miss those old days of your regional territories. It's just, it never has been the same, has it?
No, it never has. You know, it was, and, you know, Bobby and I was, and you were in an era, and so was Mike, where, you know, you look at it, you just sit now and look back at it and just think what it took to do it in the same town week after week after week after week after week, year after year. I mean, it was, you know, it took some great talent, great heads, and great promotions to do that. And it was
down here in this market, in Dothan especially, if you could not do what the name on the billboard was wrestling, and you were a great wrestler, you were a great worker, but if you couldn't wrestle in Dothan, Alabama, you get booed out of the building.
That's for sure. They knew talent when they saw it.
They knew talent when they saw it, and that's we had some great guys in here. Any questions you guys have for me?
How did you actually get started in the business, Charlie? I know you grew up here in Dothan as a fan.
I grew up actually in Enterprise, 28 miles away, and I was good friends with a guy named Bob Howell, who recently retired from broadcasting as anchor of WSFA in Montgomery News for about 30-something years. At one time, he was doing the news here in Dothan, and he was part-time doing the wrestling business with, Rocky McGuire promoted Dothan. You had our good friend Cowboy Bob Kelly promoted the Mobile market, Pensacola. Rocky was the booker for Dothan and this end of the Mobile territory. And when Bob took that job in Montgomery as anchor, they needed somebody to do ring announcing, and I was already established in radio. So from being friends with Bob, I ended up landing the spot to do the ring announcing at the Farm Center, which also was ring announcing at the TV studio at Channel 4 on Saturday afternoons. And it worked from there. In the couple of months, I ended up with the role of doing the commentary, teaming up with John Goss, who was a veteran of it, and Al Roberts, and the three of us did the live and pre-taped Gulf Coast Championship Wrestling.
I don't know if you have it or not, but I have a show from 1977, I guess it is, with you doing the ring announcing. One of the matches on there was Kurt Von Hess, who at that time was the Gulf Coast Heavyweight Champion, and he is working with a young man by the name of Mike Seitz, who went on to become Free Michael Hayes.
Exactly.
A lot of guys on that tape. There's a match on there with Dick Dunn and a gentleman by the name of Matt Rivera, who ended up working in New York as Jose Luis Rivera. A lot of guys have passed through this territory. I'm in the process of building a website dedicated to the history of the Gulf Coast territory from 1952 until Ron Fuller opened up in 1978. I don't go into the southeastern end of it because it's just Gulf Coast is enough work. I may eventually branch off and you can through there, but just to see all the names that I've put together that passed through this territory in the 25-year span that I'm dedicating my site to, it's amazing. Veterans, well-known people that came through, you know, at the twilight of their careers, guys who came through and worked here at the height of their careers, as well as guys who started here. This was their first territories, like Michael Hayes, like Steve Kern, guys like that, that worked in this territory at the beginning of their career. And
I tell you one that, and this goes into the southeastern days, Michael, but one that really got his first big push in this territory was Arn Anderson.
Yep, sure did.
And the funniest, we're all asked that have been a part of this business, and I know I'm asked from time to time, what is the most serious thing you ever saw? What's the funniest thing you ever saw? And what was the funniest thing that ever happened to me involved Arn Anderson, Bob Armstrong, and Ric Flair. And it was a TV studio. Have you heard about the hair incident any of you guys know about that deal?
I don't.
No.
Okay. Arn threatened me one time through somebody else that if I ever put this on YouTube or any kind of form of, I threatened to sell it to America's Funniest Videos one time, but Arn in his early days was at a receding hairline. Can I have a raise of hands of all the guys that knew that? All three of you knew that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Huh?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I did not know it, and I did not know he had some artificial up there, and I don't think anybody really knew. And Flair was in town to wrestle around the horn on territory, doing all the major towns, Birmingham, everywhere the Southeastern went, Mobile, Pensacola, all the major cities, and it was going to be Bob Armstrong against Ric Flair for the World Heavyweight Championship. Well, the deal was we were going to go off the air that day with those guys fighting. And Flair is with me at the desk doing color commentary while Armstrong wrestles Arn Anderson in a TV match. And Jerry, I know, will remember the deal where Armstrong threw you into the turnbuckle and here comes a karate chop right over the edge of your head, right? You've mm-hmm. had that two or three times.
Yes, sir.
I'm sure. But he had his fingers taped up, threw Arn into the turnbuckle, across they go, and that toupee broke loose. It was tacked on in three places, stitched on in three different places. And when the tape and the toupee met, it flies up, two of the stitches break, blood starts streaming down Aaron's head into his face. I look in the monitor, and Flair's looking in the monitor. Then we look into the ring to make sure what we're seeing in the monitor is actually what is going on. And then I looked at Flair, and Flair looks at me, and I said, "Oh, my God, Rick, you better watch him. He's scalping him already." And we both lost it. And for the next 3 to 4 minutes, the finish of the match took place, and the next thing we know, Bob is right in our faces, and we're at the desk. And we're slapping each other in the chest and on the knees and on the legs, trying to straighten each other up, but we're laughing. And the Rolex watch drops, there's diamonds going all over everywhere, and it's the funniest episode of Southeastern Championship Wrestling that was ever recorded. And I happen to know where there's a copy of that. Any bidders on that?
I've never heard that one in my life.
No, I hadn't either.
Oh, yeah. Well, ask Bob. Bob will confirm that. That is one of the funniest things that ever happened. And dumb me just went for the line because that's all I could think about. I said, "Oh, my God, Rick, you better watch him. He's scalping him already." And that was the first time I knew Arn had as bad of a receding hairline as he did. Great, great guy in the business, though. I mean, and that was three great guys working together that day. With one dummy laughing, you know what I mean? We had some interesting times down here. Michael and I were talking about some of the matches he had on TV. And I mean, Bobby, you never worked down in this area that much, did you?
I was down there for about a month.
That's why
I made Dothan TV twice. And
Were you down here in that interim period when it was going from the Fields to the Fullers, and there was a time period in there that Georgia Championship Wrestling actually took it over for about a month or so?
Barnett actually had a deal in place to buy the territory. And the deal was that they were supposed to quit running. They were going to let the territory sit dormant for about 30 days. and then we were going to start sending guys in, and I'm not sure who did what, but they kept they told Barnett they had quit running, and they were still running little small towns on the side, and when he found out, he backed out of the deal, and then that's when Fuller came into the picture. But I was there. I came back. What year was I there, Michael? I don't know. 76, 77?
February 1977.
I came in. My deal was I was supposed to come there for 2 weeks, and then I was supposed to go to Tennessee. And when I got down there, they said they asked me if I would stay through the summer, and they said, we'll take care of you. And I said, okay. And it took me a month to figure out what taking care of me meant, and it was time to do something else.
Just think of that and take
right.
care of you.
Oh, I heard that. It's like I was telling somebody the other day about the story about Lord Littlebrook going into Nick Gulas's office and saying, hey, I worked 3 days this week, man, and I went in a hole. He said, I need a little more money. And he said, Roy Welch was sitting there, and he said, just be thankful you didn't work 6 days.
There you go.
So, you know.
You know, what we talked about earlier, this territory was the garden spot, and it's hard to get guys to move out of here. Because if you worked out west Oklahoma, I mean, I'm sure Jerry made some runs out there, but it was 600-mile trips out there, and I think the longest trip in this territory back in the days of Gulf Coast was maybe 150 miles in one night, and that made a big difference at the end of the week on your pocketbook. Your expenses, number one, and just a halfway decent payoff, you could survive in this territory better than you could, say, Oklahoma or somewhere like that.
Well, you could stay on the beach all day, too.
Forgot about that. That's right.
Yeah, you stay on the beach all day, and then, you know, like you say, the trips weren't long, so you didn't have to leave till, you know, 4 o'clock, 4:30. So it was nice down there.
What is Oates? What are you doing these days, sir?
I'm living in Savannah.
Okay.
I left Columbus after all those years and wound up over here where my wife's from. I love it.
Very good. Very good.
Well, tell him the rest of the story now, sir.
Jerry's being polite. Jerry
yes.
is the high sheriff of Tybee Island.
No, let's just say that.
Oh, I now know where not to go. Okay. Whoa.
The animal control officer and head beachcomber at Tybee Island, Georgia.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fancy title to ride around in a golf cart and stare at the people on the beach all day.
I have people flag me down and ask me, do they actually pay me to do that?
I was going to ask, how much do you pay them to let you do that? I mean,
that's what I tell some people. I say, I actually pay them to do this.
I would think you need to pay them very well to do that. I know what Michael is doing. What about Bobby Simmons? I know you guys have this show, don't tell enough about yourselves on here.
I am I'm actually bivocational, if that's the correct word. I have been pastoring churches up here for the last 22 years, but I also work for a company called R.R. Donnelly, and I've been there 27 years.
Very good.
I was smart enough when I finally got out of the business to get a real job.
Get a real job.
So
I'm still, I'm not in the wrestling business, but I still do TV 5 days a week. Do a early morning show leading up to the Good Morning America on the ABC affiliate. And speaking of church, I go to church, same church, little Baptist church out from Dothan, Rehoboth Baptist, that a guy that all three of you have had dealings with, that probably, if we had a shoot, you three would flee, even with him at age 72, 73. Does the name Leon Baxter ring a bell to anybody?
Oh, yeah.
Where would you go if I said tonight it's Jerry against Leon? You'd run. You'd go hide with your animals, wouldn't you, Jerry?
Absolutely. How's he doing?
I mean, we're talking about the people who don't know the wrestling pro for a number of years, Leon Baxter. One of the strongest guys I ever witnessed in the business.
He was scary. Even when he worked babyface, he was scary. He could part a crowd better than anybody I ever saw in my life.
Hurricane Eloise came through this country in about 1975-76, and I was still living in Enterprise, and we had a lot of damage there, and I happened to come to Dothan a couple of days after the storm and went out by Leon's house to check on him and go up to Leon's house, and the wife said, "He's down at the barn." And I looked down, and coming up a terrace at his farm out there in the pasture, uphill. Now, you picture this, and this is the God's honest truth. Here's Leon with a deep freeze full of food on his back. You know, why empty the stuff out and make the load lighter, you know? Leon just, I said, "Leon, you okay?" "Yeah. Make sure that spot's cleared out back there on the porch where I can put this thing down." He was coming to the electricity.
How's he doing, Charlie?
He is. Leon has had some health issues, like a lot of us lately. He's recently had surgery on his eyes, but he is doing good. I see him in church every Sunday morning. And Leon is quite an individual, and I guess made it as good as anybody from this part of the country in the wrestling business. Big in Japan. Am I not right on that, Gary?
What now?
He was big over in Japan when he'd go overseas.
I really don't know. I was just going to ask you, where all did he work besides down there?
Oklahoma, Tennessee, from one end of the Welch family to the other up there.
He was in Georgia for a while.
He was in Georgia. Yeah.
Juan Sebastian were the Gauchos for a while.
For the Gauchos. They worked in the Carolinas as well. Together as the Gauchos.
When did he break in?
Probably early 60s, I would think. What do you think, Charlie?
Yeah, early 60s, and Rocky McGuire, who was, as y'all know, the booker down here on the promoter on the Dothan end, they did a deal with Leon where right after he broke in, they put him where Marks could come challenge him, and anybody that could pin him within so many minutes would win $1,000. And guess what? Nobody ever walked away with $1,000. He was a great shooter. I mean, he was a tough guy. Still is. I wouldn't want to make Leon mad, but he still lives in this community. And we got a lot of guys that, of course, around Pensacola and other areas down here, a lot of the great to the business of the 60s and 70s ended up making this part of the world their home.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. But we've got a guy
of those.
Go ahead, Charlie.
Go ahead. I said memories of those days.
We weren't on each other. Go ahead, Charlie. Finish your thought.
I said, memories of those days of Jerry and Ted O's. Now, I was joking, Jerry, about his age, but seriously, I saw him on TV before I ever got to work in the business. So he was not, but the ones that I grew up watching in the early 60s, and you can figure it all out, I'm 57, was 57 back in August, turned 57 in August. I grew up with all the Fields except Don. He had already been in a car wreck, and which kept him from being in the ring. But Speedy Hatfield, the Fields' dad, was the main referee down here. I grew up with Dick Dunn, Mario Galento, the Hines brothers, all the Monroes, Rocket Sputnik, Flash. These are the people that I grew up watching on black and white TV in the early 1960s who were bigger than life. And then I was blessed at the age of 21 in 1976 to actually work with everyone that I mentioned to you. And a lot of them were in the twilight of their careers. Got to work with Mario a couple of times. They brought him back in as special referee and everything. So As far as the cream of the crop, the 60s, 70s, and 80s, I was blessed to work with some of the greatest that ever were in the business and were able to do what was on the marquee, and that was wrestle and entertain the people and give them more than their money's worth.
That's the truth, and let me tell you, not enough people know about Charlie Flatt as far as where you rank as far as television commentators and everything, but you certainly rank right up there with the Gordon Sullys and the Lance Russells and the Les Thatchers of this world, in my opinion. You were just not in the position to go national because you were staying in your home area and everything, but those who were fans of Southeastern and Continental certainly know who Charlie Flatt was. And
I actually, Michael, got a chance, and I turned it down. And it was in 1988 with World Championship Wrestling. A guy named Jim Hurd was running the show at the time. And they started talking contracts and what were in contracts, and I didn't like it. And I said, not enough dirt roads to ride around up there around Atlanta. So I stayed out of the limelight on that deal. And with family, I'm glad I did, because that's the part that a lot of people don't understand, sacrifices that were made. And it was to make a living by a lot of the guys we just mentioned, who gave up their families because of being the separation they were from their family. There was a lot of pitfalls around this business. Now that it's an entertainment business, but even back in those days, there were a lot of. It was a bad business to be in because you gave up a lot with your family.
Well, that's true. That is absolutely true. Well, we've got some callers calling in. The first one I'm going to get on the line, I recognize. This is Charlie Flatt's biggest fan and the world's biggest Ron Fuller, Mark. Formerly from Pensacola, now from Jacksonville, Florida, Jeff Luce. Let me get him on the line with us. Jeff, you there with us?
Certainly I am, Mike. How are you?
All right, doing fine.
Good. Bobby and Jerry, I hope you're doing well.
Doing well, thank you.
Doing wonderful.
Yeah, and now I get to talk to the voice of my childhood.
Whoa! Who else is on the line is what I want to know.
That would be you, Mr. Charlie Flatt. Country Charlie Flatt. You remember that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was several years ago,
no doubt.
I have a few questions. I'm not going to take the whole show, I promise. The first question I had was... When Ron Fuller was going to run up in West Virginia and Ohio, and then he ended up abandoning that, I have some videotape from a Dayton, Ohio TV station where Southeastern was syndicated, and there's some local promos there with Joe LaDuke and Austin Idol. Do you have any inside information on that you can share?
I remember doing some inserts. The major markets that were, and I think at one time at the height of Southeastern, we were in like 17 different television markets. And there was a time, I do vaguely remember it, it did not work out, but Kentucky, parts of Kentucky and Southern Ohio were in the works. And we actually did some interviews for some towns up that way, but I don't know if they ever ran the first show up there or not. I really don't. I wish I could help you with that.
Yes, sir. And also was wondering about. I'm trying to collect my thoughts here. Angelo Papo's International Championship Wrestling was on WCMI Automobile for a little while. And you know the history that Ron had dealing with him. And so Ron, for a short period of time, put Southeastern Showcase in that time slot, you know, where either you or Rick, I'm pretty sure it was just Rick maybe, would do interviews and they would show house shows, matches.
Right.
And I... my guess, from what I've learned, is that only us in the Mobile, Pensacola market got to see that. How come he didn't put that out for the whole territory to see?
That's one you would have to ask Ronald himself. I do not know the decision on that. Interesting side note, you mentioned Angelo Papa. When I first started doing ring announcing for Gulf Coast under Rocky McGuire, I got to work with the Papas. And it was Randy, Lanny, and their father. And he brought the tag team show into Gulf Coast Wrestling for a short period of time. So I worked before, you're right, I'm getting old, because when you predate the Macho Man, you're in the old category, right?
Well, we're all getting there.
And that's a good thing. It's a very good thing.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, I never had the opportunity to meet. I did have an opportunity to interact with Rick Stewart some, and what a great guy he was. And he you and him were just a great commentary team, and the world needs to know about how great the two of you were. And the last one, I hope that you remember this, and this has been a mystery for as long as I've been on the internet trying to get information on this. When David Schultz, okay, let's run the whole angle. Okay, Austin Idol was being presented with a... Austin Idol was being presented with a plaque for some award that he was getting from a journalist, and the guy ended up smashing it over Idol's head, and Schultz come out of the bad guy's dressing room, and they cut some of Idol's hair. And it turned out that the guy that was presenting the award happened to be some kind of preliminary wrestler from another promotion. And the next week on TV, Austin gets revenge on him. And nobody can remember who that wrestler was.
Huh. Well, I know what name.
No.
I can't be that far. What name?
I'm just sorry they didn't break Idol's neck when they were doing that. I mean, if they were going to do it right. I didn't say that, did I? Did I say that?
I didn't hear
that. Okay, the devil made me do it. Pray for me, Bobby. Pray for me, man. there were several angles down here, guys, and you know. There was some serious heat between a few people through the years, and David was one, and I love David Schultz to death. David, I was one of the few people who kind of understood and took David as David was, and of course, now I didn't have to work in the ring with him or anything like that, but David and I remain friends to this day. In fact, it's been a couple, 3 years ago, he stopped by the house on the way to, and you can believe this or not, go spend time with his grandkids at Disney World. So David's even mellowed out in his senior years, but Jules was always a great friend.
All right. Well, I'll let the rest of the people get a chance to talk to you, but it's been a pleasure, Mr. Platt.
Thank you, sir. You have a great evening.
Thanks,
you
Jeff.
Too. All right, thank you.
Bye.
I got a bud in here. He's talking about getting heat with people. I'm getting hot sitting here listening. He's talking about he got to work with Randy Savage before he was the Macho Man. Well, I turned 57.
Yeah, Randy and Lanny Poffa.
Well, I turned 57 in May this year. And I refereed some of the first matches he ever had.
Yep.
Ooh.
So.
Ooh.
When I first met him, he weighed 100 and maybe 75 pounds soaking wet and wrestled under a mask as a spider. And he looked closer to
Randy
a spider than he did a wrestler.
That was Randy?
That was Randy. And then when Lanny came in the territory, Tom Ernesto was the booker, and he called me off to the side and he said, "This is Lanny Poffo and you're married to him for the next 2 weeks." Because Atlanta was the first place he ever came where he was on his own. and Angelo was tight with that dollar, bought him a Volkswagen Beetle. It was a brand new one, no air conditioning, and I made trips for the next 2 weeks with Lanny in a Volkswagen Beetle.
What year was that, Bobby?
1973.
Okay. 76, he and Randy, you know, were tagging at the time, and I remember Angelo was with them, and of course the thing that always amazed me with Lanny was the barefoot, working barefoot. He was unreal. And by 76, he was pretty much mastering the trade, I would think.
I'll tell you some more things that would amaze you, but this is a family show, so we'll leave it at that.
Well, Charlie, you just learned something. I bet you didn't know Angelo Tapapo was tight with a dollar, did you?
No.
Good.
I never worked for him, but I've heard the stories through the years, and you know, it's like the thousands of Nick Gula stories you can listen to through the years. How the guy ever got anybody to work in that territory, I still don't understand it.
There were some guys, though, that enjoyed working for Nick.
If Nick liked you, he took care of you.
He did.
I mean, Rocket, yes, he always took care of Rocket up there. So Rocket never minded going to work for him.
Okay.
But, you know, there was a lot of them. Gene Bennett, who is a friend of mine, frequent caller to the show, he worked for Nick for years, and he said the worst people that he treated up there was the guys from Mexico, because he would collect their green cards when they would come into work. He'd tell them some story, and he had to have them to give them to the tax commission or some such nonsense. But what he did, he basically held them hostage. He would pay them just what he could get by with paying, and he wouldn't let them have their green card, so they couldn't leave.
Question for Jerry from me, and everybody, you chime in. During part of my run in there with Ron, and you know, we had Louis Tillet in here booking at one time, and that's an old name from Georgia Championship Wrestling from decades ago. Tallahassee was the oddball town of Florida because Eddie, you know, was based in Tampa, and you had all of Florida going good, but Tallahassee was just too far out of the way for them to run on a regular basis, and it didn't seem too good on tape out of Florida Championship Wrestling. Same thing, we tried running it, and we had problems. We drew some down there, but it just it was one of the towns that I think kind of like Dothan, it needed its own TV. Do you guys remember those days I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Well, Lee tried there some in the late 60s. In fact, he first started running there. He and Eddie Graham were splitting the talent. Eddie was sending some people up from Tampa. Lee was sending some of his guys over from Mobile. And that lasted a couple of weeks, and then Lee was just running it by himself using guys. In fact, Bill Bowman and Joe Turner worked in there quite a bit when they were the interns.
Right.
Bill's told me about it. And they were on one of those mixed cards because they worked with Joe Scarpa and Jose Lothario, which were the Southern Tag Team Champions for Graham at the time.
But there never was an effort with Graham and, say, Barnett or any of the owners of the Georgia territory, including Ray Gunkel, to ever try to work that Tallahassee market? Because you look at Thomasville, Georgia, Tallahassee area, that place just never did anything, did it?
Not really.
Now, we used to draw a decent house in Thomasville every once in a while.
Yeah,
we only ran it on a spot show basis. We never ran it regularly, but we would go into the high school down there, and we drew some pretty good houses in there.
Okay, but that was off of Georgia.
That was off of Georgia TV.
Yeah, Georgia TV.
Because we had a tape running out of a Valdosta TV station.
Okay. All those days fascinated me, you know, and we kind of ran ourselves out of business when TV came, the technology, the cable. came in and you had markets, overlapping markets, it kind of took away from our ability to run territories.
Well, that area you're talking about, Charlie, that's even before cable. You were running into the same situation there. You had that little corner there where people could pick up, out of Georgia, they could pick up the Dothan show. They could pick up whatever tapes were running out of Tallahassee. They were seeing our shows out of Albany and out of Valdosta. And no matter what you put into a show in that area, people would always come up to you and they'd want to say, well, how come such and such isn't here who would be working over in the Dothan area? Or they'd want to say, well, how come such and such isn't here who was in the Florida area? And I'm sure when they ran shows, they run into the same thing with guys wanting to see our talent. So it was that was one of those areas that was just kind of a it was just hard to draw in there.
It was like
and
a bleed
we
over.
We did not run a lot down in that corner.
Too much of a bleed over from different
areas,
I think.
Yeah.
I got a story for you guys from down here that's funny, and it has a little bit of a national prominence to it. And somewhere around 1970, I forgot the exact year, Channel 4 WTVY moved their broadcast tower from the old TV station that you guys have all worked in with me out there in Webb. They moved the broadcast tower to Northwest Florida to be in a triangle where they'd get the Fort Walton, Panama City, and Dothan markets. Well, when they swapped towers, that cut out a lot of the north end of their range and viewing area. The station manager got a letter from 1 Lillian Carter in Plains, Georgia, just mad as hell because they had took her wrestling off from Dothan, Alabama. Now, does that ring a bell with any of y'all?
I love it. I love it.
True story. It happened. I mean, and she was a big fan. She, Fred, of course, had the rocking chair for her there at City Auditorium in Columbus for years. And I actually worked a couple of shows up there, and I remember one show I worked as an announcer because Jim Hurd,
Jim Carlisle.
Carlisle. He had some surgery or something, and I worked up there. And Louis Tillet, for whatever reason, was booking Georgia at the time. So he called me up there after he had been in down here, and I went up there, and Lillian Carter was in the matches in Columbus. She stopped by to see some of the guys. Do you ever remember that, Jerry?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Well, when they moved that TV tower down here, she couldn't pick it up in Plains anymore, and she voiced her opinion on that.
I love it.
The president's mama can't see wrestling. My gosh.
Oh, man. Well, I've got a good friend of mine who used to live in Dothan. He now lives in Freeport, Florida, which is right outside of Fort Walton. And he was thrilled to know that you were going to be on the show tonight, Charlie. And he sent me about 15 text messages with questions for you. So,
oh, my gosh.
I'm going to hit you with a couple of them. He wanted to get your thoughts on some of the matches that were at the beginning of Southeastern that were pretty big matches, one of which was Austin Idol versus Jack Briscoe. I guess would have been in 78, 79, somewhere around in there. It happened in Dothan.
Ooh, who is this guy?
Mike Calloway?
There was a big fiasco that actually occurred. And it was Louie, that was a time when Hulk Hogan was being built up, and we actually went outdoors one event at the Rip Hughes Stadium, local high school football stadium here in Dothan, that seated around 10,000 in the stands. Drew the largest house in the history of Dothan. There was a lot of controversy surrounding that. Briscoe almost did not work that night, and I was understanding with Jack on what happened. Jack and Jerry were both booked in here. They came in, but what they did not know, what Jack didn't know until right before the match, he was booked to come in and take the place of Dusty, who was billed on the show, but Louie knew the whole time Dusty wasn't going to make it. Now, is this registering with any of you guys in the business is what we have here going on? And then there was another outsider in on the deal, Jack Curtis, and it was a pretty hot night in Dothan, Alabama, even not just during the matches at the show, but after the matches were over with. And Briscoe did not have his heart in it once he found out how he was being used in that situation. And I had the utmost respect for Jack Briscoe. And I don't blame him. He did work the match. He went out and did the match, but I don't think he was too fond of working with Dennis that night.
Now, you mentioned the Rip Hughes Stadium. Was that the same card where Hogan, or at that time Terry Boulder, worked with Harley Race, or was that the second time they went to Rip Hughes?
No, they didn't go to Rip Hughes but one time, and that was it. Yeah, that was the night.
Because Mike was asking your thoughts on that match, too, with Boulder against Harley.
Harley did as good a job as Harley could do with him. I mean, this may be upsetting to some people who listen to the show, but Terry Bollea was a great talent when it come to charisma and a sensation, but you got to understand, the guy hadn't been in the business that long at that time, and he couldn't wrestle his way out of a wet paper sack, and you're working with the likes of Harley Race?
Yep.
Come on. That's a tough task to take somebody that green, even if you are the great Harley Race. And Harley Race, there's never been a better, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, and I'm not saying that to take away from your Briscoes, your Funks, but night after night, representing the business around the country the way Harley did, and if need be, getting into a bar fight and protecting the business, there's only one Harley Race. Do you agree with that, Jerry, or am I off base?
Absolutely. No, absolutely.
Well, I want to chime in on the Hulk Hogan, Terry Bollea, whatever thing. He's been in the business now for however long he wants to say he's been in, and he still don't know a wrist lock from a wristwatch.
Thank you.
No, I mean, he was always nice to me, and he's a nice, person to be around, fun guy. Yeah, but talent as far as what's on the marquee, it took him all these years. He can drop a leg, he can drop an elbow, and that's about it, boys. I mean, there's not been a lot of improvement there.
This is true.
I remember Louis Tolley teaching him. Now, when he came to Dothan, he came in a van with Brutus Beefcake, and he was playing bass guitar, if I'm not mistaken, and Michael, you can help me with this. He was playing bass guitar in a band over in Savannah, Georgia, or somewhere, when he came in to the Channel 4 studios, told Louis Tolley, "I want to be a wrestler." I was in the room, and little Louis looks up and says, "I want you to be a wrestler." That might have been the biggest mistake our business ever had, if you want to. But, I saw him being taught. I know he trained some in Florida, but I saw him also when he was in Dothan learn some of the basic moves. And as far as talent for in the ring, what was it Lou Thayer said one time? I'll give him a 2. As far as being able to talk on the microphone, give him a 10.
Yep.
You have to look at the guy. I just have to go back and look at the guys who paved the way. And I'm going to include, not because I'm on the show with it, Jerry Oates. you and Ted, when you got in that ring, I mean, we were going to see hip toss, we're going to see arm drags, we're going to see a lot of things, a lot of moving, and we're all also going to see you guys settle down, grab a hold, and I don't care if you were the biggest skeptic in the world when you left the building, if we saw that caliber of person working, when the mark left the building, he said, "You know that Jerry Oates, he was stretching that guy's arm out there tonight. Ah, yeah, you know." But we don't see that anymore, and that's what I'm. That's why I never tune into it anymore.
Well, I appreciate the compliment.
I've been in the ring with him, and I can attest he stretched
you. Shut your mouth.
You're the reason I got to have my knees replaced.
Brother, thank you for your testimony there. I know he appreciates it.
If Frank Hickey were alive, he could testify too, couldn't he?
I'm going to tell y'all something. That's one of the funniest lines. The Frank Hickey line is one of the funniest things I've ever heard. Oh.
You know, he might not have been the last guy that told me that either.
You're talking about hip tosses. Here again, we're talking. We're throwing things around. Not giving a hip toss, but Jerry took the best hip toss I think I've ever seen in my life.
I used to make Ted mad. He said, "How do you do that?" He said, "You go around behind the guy." I said, "I don't know, Ted. That's just the way I do it." I appreciate that, buddy.
Well, I can remember Renesto telling you, "Take a couple of them big high hip tosses." When the booker gets off on a move you're taking, that's good.
So you look at what we grew up in and what we... And the ones of us that are sharing this conversation tonight, what I grew up with before I was even a part of the business, in the heat of the summer, and Ted and Bobby and Michael all know that the Houston County Farm Center still don't have an air conditioner in it, and in the heat of the summer, you would have athletes, and here I'm not being ugly, but I just had a major heart attack surgery. I smoked for 40 years. You can't get a cigarette anywhere near me anymore. But I look at people like, and I remember this in doping, Jack Briscoe would smoke a pack of Marlboro cigarettes before he'd go to the ring with Ken Lucas, and they would work 1 hour in that building with a temperature over 100 degrees. They would work an hour and bring it back in 2 months with a 90-minute time limit, and then they'd do 90 minutes. What is the longest match we've had in the wrestling business or the sports entertainment business in the last 5 years? Maybe
8 minutes.
6 minutes? Okay.
But you know what it boiled down to? I think it was the love of what we did, the passion we had for it, whether it was you, Scully Flat, Bobby Simmons at his role. Bobby wore many hats in the wrestling game, and I know I loved it, and I know what Mike did. He loved it. It was just, you know, I just think it was, these conversations like tonight, you just think back, man, you know, it was something that, I mean, I thoroughly loved doing what I did. And, you know, there's a payday for what we did. But I would do it again. There's no doubt. But I would do it again.
Tell me, Jerry, if you agree with me. Didn't you draw a lot of energy, especially in a place like Dothan, as hot as it was, as miserable as that Heels dressing room was, old tiny Heels dressing room was, that old red dirt floor? It would tear you up worse than anything in the ring ever did with you. Didn't you draw the as much energy from the atmosphere and the audience in that building than you did anywhere?
Exactly, because I told you early on that building had its own atmosphere, and you know when you, it was the people, you know, they would just, like you said, they energized you, and you went out there and gave them everything you had. I mean, it was just, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I wrestled in a lot of big buildings in my life. the Superdome, the Omni, Miami Convention Center buildings overseas. But I'd rather wrestle in a building like the Bell Auditorium in Augusta. That was one of my favorites of all time. The building in Columbia, South Carolina. Dothan would be one of the very top buildings. I mean, it was just, it was the atmosphere. I don't know. It was like electric, you know. I'm sure you felt the same way, Bobby.
Yeah, there were certain places that you just looked forward to going to.
Yep. Well, a place like Dothan, the Expo Hall, Mobile, as small as it was, but you could look out in that audience, and me being, you know, opening card, I knew that I was there just to do a job for somebody, but I could look out in that audience, and I could remember being a fan and having the same ringside seats that I had for year after year after year, and I could look out in that audience, and I could tell that some of those people had been coming there 35, 40 years and
Absolutely.
Had the same seats. And if I was able to get a reaction out of them, whether it was to cheer me or fuss at me, I felt like I'd accomplished something because those people had seen it all. And if I was still able to get a rise out of them, then I felt like I'd done my job.
And,
I think we all felt that way.
What you just said, that's what we had in Dothan. We had some of the most hated heels in the world. But the people respected them. And you know what I'm talking about, Jerry. I mean, they could have the hottest thing going, but when it was said and done, if one of them looked like, and one night we had a situation where I think it was Randy Rose fell off of either a pole match or the top of a cage. And he was probably one of the most hated heels in this territory at the time of Southeastern Wrestling. It got so quiet in that building till he moved again that it was scary.
I'm sure.
And they started to bring a stretcher out. And Randy, being the heel that he was, said, "Don't anybody touch me. I'm going to get up and I'm walking to that damn dressing room." And he did. And he got a standing ovation, and the next week he comes out there, they're throwing ice at him and cups and everything else. But the fans down here respected whoever it was in the ring, because most people that work this territory on a long basis put their all into it. It was something like Jerry said, you wanted to come to Dothan, wanted to work because you knew you were going to get a reaction from the crowd.
That's absolutely the truth. Well, let me throw some names at you, Charlie, for some of the announcers that you work with and share the booth with and get your take on, starting at the beginning of your career with John Gauze and Al Roberts.
Great guys. We lost Al about 2 years ago. He had a came in and watched. He had retired as sports director and announcer for Channel 4. Came in and watched his Ohio. He was a big Ohio fan because that's where he's from. Watched them play in a basketball game and died of a massive heart attack sitting in his lazy boy recliner. John is still with us. Get to see John from time to time. Great, great individuals, and both very good friends.
Okay. How about Gordon Soley?
Gordon was, I had been doing TV for about a year or two, and they had done mainly the ring announcing. When Gordon came in, it was in the first part of 77, and he said, "Look, you're going to have a bigger role in this deal with me." And Gordon taught me something. I was still a little bit let's call it camera shy. Gordon could sense that, and Gordon gave me advice that guest I have on my program to this day. I use the Gordon Soley 101 TV thing, and look, hey, if you're nervous, look at that camera, and if it's your wife or your best friend or your mom or your dad you can talk to easier, picture the camera being them, talk to the camera, and learn to do that and relax, and Gordon and I were very, very good friends and worked very, very well together.
Okay, the next name is somebody we're all familiar with because he's done our show many, many times. In fact, so many times we had to ask him to quit calling. I'm kidding with you here.
Les Thatcher.
No, no, no. Well, that's also on the list, but no, Dickie Steinborn.
Dickie Steinborn. Oh, my gosh. Worked with Dickie, enjoyed that, because there again, a lot of the history of, Dickie, go back in the 1940s, you know, but he was retiring by 1950. No, he has a lot of great years of experience, a lot of knowledge of the history of the business. Of course, his father, Milo Steinborn, and some of his in-laws and outlaws and things like that. Enjoyed working with Dickie, and then Les Thatcher is right in that group because Les, you know, former worker like Dickie, and Les and I always were real smooth. I thought we're real smooth together, and I've heard people still to this day say we miss, you know, seeing you and Les working together. And in the latter years, one that was just a hoot to work with, and we never did get recognition, a lot of recognition, but it was in the Continental days, and that was Dutch Mantell. Now,
yeah,
working with Dutch was just, all those other guys were fabulous, but working with Dutch was just wow, because you never know which way he was. You kind of knew where you stood with Gordon, with Les, with Steinborn, with Rick Stewart, and different ones that come to mind. But that Dutch, and he would always, Dutch would always go back and make sure he put me over, just like I put him over. He was very kind and considerate about that.
Now, you mentioned Rick Stewart, and when Jeff was on the line with us, he talked about it. I was never around Rick because I had gotten out of the business by the time he came along and was doing Southeastern. But what was his background? Because he seemed so knowledgeable, like he was such a student of the sport and everything.
And I cannot tell you, we did not work that long together. Rick was in here kind of for a short period of time. But I do not know where his knowledge, that's a good question. And, of course, he died way too young. But I do not know where his knowledge of the business came from. I knew he was from around the Pensacola, Florida area. Am I correct on that?
If I'm not mistaken, Bobby, did you work with him when Ann tried to restart?
He worked with us up here for a while. I'm not sure, you know, Randy Rose is the one that helped get him in up here. Randy was working with us. I wanted to say he was from the Kansas City area, but I'm not sure.
I know that's where he went. That was one of the last series.
Maybe that's
he
where
left.
He wound up, but I'm not sure.
Okay. I know when he passed away, I got calls from friends and family of his in the Pensacola area. So I was assuming that he was from the Pensacola area and just thought he might have been, grew up around it or knew somebody around Pensacola that was in the business that had shared a lot of knowledge with him, because he did have a lot of knowledge of the Gulf Coast region. But then again, he also had a lot of knowledge of the Oklahoma territory from the 1970s.
Yeah, yeah. Well, another name on the list, and this gentleman was our guest a couple of weeks ago, Dr. Tom Pritchard.
Oh, my gosh. Always fun working with Tom. Love to work with Tom.
Even as shy as he is, right? Because he's a real shy person. Like Les Thatcher, he's real shy.
We're gonna have a telethon for Dr. Tom and Les to see if we can get them to come out of their shell.
Well, let me know if that ever works out for you guys. they won't say a whole lot, but Tom, not only probably the most underrated worker in the business, maybe because of the statue or whatever, But I love working on the microphone with him. But more than that, I loved his style in the ring. I really did.
He was a good worker.
He and Tony Anthony had probably one of the best feuds of all time in this market. Dirty White Boy, Tony Anthony, and Tom literally tore the houses down around here. They were great.
Now going back a little bit before the Southeastern case, and I know he came back and did a couple spots working on Dope and TV. You remember the name Lynn Tony?
Lynn Tony, yes. Yes, I do. He worked with Don Goss, Lynn Tony, and there was another name that was in there for a period of time named Sonny Harris. I don't know, do you ever remember that name?
No, that's not one I recall. I remember Don Griffith did Pensacola TV, starting
exactly.
What Lynn Tony did it first. Lynn Tony did it for most of 1971, then Don Griffith came in and did from there until they switched to maybe the Mobile House shows and using that as their television, and then they were using Jack Betterman and Leroy Morris, both who had been around from, you know, way back in the 50s, 60s.
Right.
But no, what was the name you said, Sonny Harris?
Sonny Harris did a little bit of work out there with him, and Lynn Tony worked. They brought Lynn in, I think. I'm trying to think, it was in that transition of from the Fields to the Fullers and the in between the Barnett deal and all that. He actually came up and did a few shows with me at the Dothan studio. But it got to, I think, by the time I came on board, all TV was coming out of Dothan. For Mobile,
yes,
Pensacola,
yes, it was.
Yeah,
they were
everything was bicycling through the territories. And some of the things on YouTube today are actually some clips that ended up tapes not being shipped back to Dothan that were left at the Mobile TV studio, KRG. And if I remember some of that, one day Bob Kelly gets a call from somebody at the TV station and said, "Hey, man, we're clearing out, you know, cleaning out closets and old space, and we got some tapes. Do you want them?" And that's where some of those early Dothan matches with Rip Tyler, and you know some of the ones that you can find on YouTube today.
Yeah.
I think it was just a matter of somebody not shipping the tapes back is the only reason some of those tapes were saved.
Probably so.
I have a 1-inch, or excuse me, you remember the old, and some of you guys that worked around the TV end of it, remember the old 2-inch tapes
yep.
we had that were on reel-to-reel?
Yep.
I've got the 2-inch tape. It's locked up in a safe place, so nobody come calling and ask for it. of Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan doing the arm wrestling gimmick in the ring here in Dothan. I've got a good
yep.
clean copy. I've got the original of that. So if sports entertainment people want to say that that's theirs, I've got the original. Somebody needs to send me a check. You see where I'm coming from in this?
I hear you.
I've actually got some of the old Southeastern Gulf Coast stuff that I just got stashed away in a closet at the TV station, and when they cleaned out here, I took some of the tapes. There's some classic Jerry Stubbs as Mr. Olympia. There's probably some Jerry Oates on there somewhere. I've got several hours of the old tapes. And it's amazing every once in a while to find a 3/4-inch machine, go back and look at some of that stuff as it was in the 1970s and 1980s.
Speaking of Stubbs, he had a good run down there, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. Terry had a good run as Stubbs and as Mr. Olympia. I talked to him the other day. He's doing a lot better. He's doing good.
He is actually doing ringside rap next Wednesday with Les and Mike Sempervivi.
Very good.
So that's the interesting.
Charlie, you're going to have to come back to Mobile to the reunion. We actually got Stubbs down there last year.
I know, and I had an obligation that I couldn't be there, but I promise I will be this year. Stubbs has been a great help to me through this open-heart surgery that I have been through. And he has been just, as you guys know, a lot of times we go for many years without seeing or hearing from one another. But when somebody gets in trouble in our little fraternity, a lot of people come to the rescue. Stubbs having the open heart surgery 2 years ago has been kind of an angel to me, because he has called me and told me things to expect and different things that and it's one of the guys you trusted through the years. So Jerry's been quite an inspiration to me in the last 3 to 4 months.
Well, we've got a caller from the Atlanta area, and don't recognize his number, so I'm going to get them on the air with us. Sure, they've got some questions for you, Charlie.
Okay.
Caller from Atlanta, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Larry Goodman from Georgia Wrestling History. Hey, it's a pleasure to speak to all of you, of course, and especially Charlie Platt on this occasion. I didn't get exposed to too much of Dothan wrestling until the 80s when we got it on some of it from the Joe Pedicino block, and then I would pick it up occasionally when we're down in Fort Walton area of Florida. But what I wanted to ask you about, Charlie, was the last night of wrestling in Dothan from the Continental Reunion, May 29th, 2009, and all the guys that were there that night. And it was a real special night to me, because what I remember most are your interviews up on the stage and how you painted a picture of what it was like to wrestle in that territory. And I just wondered your thoughts on some of the guys that were there that night. And if you talked about some of these, forgive me, I haven't been able to hear the whole show, but like Ken Lucas, Fabulous Don Fargo, Rotten Ron Starr, Cowboy Bob Kelly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and like you might have heard me mention earlier, maybe you didn't, a lot of these guys, I'm 57. Some of them got, you know, those that's got 10 or a few more years on me. I actually watched as a kid growing up in the area. So to be able to work with your heroes, to watch them, work with them, and then see them come back, no matter what health they may be in, some of them have health issues, some do not. Listen, it's not a work anymore. It's the real deal. Because you see somebody like Harley Race that you have the respect for that I do. And I think that night I might have made a few guys there a little uncomfortable. I said, you know, I told a story about Harley wrestling Ron Fuller. Ron wanted to go 35, 40 minutes because he didn't feel good. I was the timekeeper. Harley found out that Ron wanted me to shave some time off the match. He says, you shave 1 minute off of 60 minutes. I tell you what, you're going to deal with me. You can bet your little bippy boys they worked 1 hour in 100-degree weather in that building. Ron's wife carried him to Sacred Heart Hospital in Pensacola to get IVs. Harley spent the night at my apartment, ate a whole Domino's pizza, drank a case of beer, and had him on a plane the next day going to the Miami, where he wrestled 3 shows that day. Heck, what do you think? Harley will always be the man, as far as I'm concerned, because he walked the walk, he talked the talk, he lived it. And so many of those guys that night, that reunion in Dothan, they lived it. Your Bob Armstrongs, your Ken Lucases, all these guys that a lot of the world never got to see. They were never in the national forefront when all this explosion took place in the 80s, but they're the reason that some of these guys make the money they make today and don't really deserve it. And that's my opinion, not y'all. I hope I don't make too many enemies tonight, but I mean, I go back to the guys that really had a passion for what they did. It's like if you, any job you do in life, do it well and have a passion to do it, and you'll always come out okay.
This is true.
Charlie, that night you mentioned when the territory was at its most expansive. If I recall right, you mentioned a run that guys had to do sometimes from Quincy, Florida, on one end, and I don't remember where it was on the other end. Could you explain that a little bit?
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm gonna call out two legendary names, and this is I think the story that I was telling was on these two guys, and these two legends, Jerry knows, Don Carson and Dick Dunn, at one time. They were the World Tag Team Champions. You remember those days, Jerry?
Yes.
Okay. They did shots starting up their Saturday when they were World Tag Team Champions. They did TV in Memphis. They would go to Atlanta and do TV there. Come down to Columbus, do a TV, live TV in Dothan. And then on a small plane would fly them back to Birmingham where they would do another TV. That was their Saturdays. But driving-wise, sometimes on Saturdays you would do Dothan TV. You would do Quincy, Florida. And you're talking about back in the old days in the early 60s, mid-60s, the roads were just little pig trails down here. In fact, Michael helped me with this. Don Fields was injured to a point where he could not wrestle anymore in the early 1960s, and it was an automobile accident, leaving
yes,
a spot show in Op, Alabama, going back home to Mobile. I mean,
right.
these guys lived some dangerous lives.
Well, Larry, you were talking about, and this is even before Charlie's time, the Gulf Coast Territory at one time in 1964 and 65 stretched from Quincy, Florida to Lake Charles, Louisiana.
There you go.
Lee bought out Harry Romero, who was running Louisiana at the time, in 1964, and they went as far as Lake Charles, Louisiana, which is right on the Texas border. And, you know, all the way to Quincy, and sometimes even doing shots in Tallahassee. They eventually dropped, by the end of 64, they dropped Lake Charles because it was just too far to go. But for the remainder of 64, 65, 66, 67, and into February of 68, they ran from New Orleans to Quincy, Florida. The Gulf Coast Territory, what most people don't realize, was basically split up into three sections. There was the Dothan, Panama City, Quincy, New Brockton, which was Rocky McGuire. Rocky at one time ran Mobile and Pensacola, too, up until 1968. Louisiana was another end. Mobile and Pensacola was a separate end, but Rocky booked it as well. The Louisiana end was totally separate, had their own guys, their own angles, their own television. Mobile and Pensacola had their own guys, their own angles, their own television. Dothan had their own guys, their own angles, their own television. Louisiana was booked by Bill Golden, Jimmy Golden's father, for 3 or 4 years until mid-67. Then he left and Bob Kelly started booking. Bob finished up Louisiana. They came back in 1968, reopened Mississippi. Bob opened Mississippi. That, again, was a separate end of the territory, their own televisions, their own towns, their own angles, their own crew. And, of course, they would trade talent between. Some guys would work all three ends of it. But then some guys like Dick Dunn and Ken Lucas, the pro, they would work you know, they spend 3 or 4 months just working the doping in when you had other guys in the Mobile and even a third crew in the Mississippi. And the one of the things, and I love working for Ron Fuller. I had all the respect in the world for Ron Fuller, but the thing that I remembered from growing up in the Gulf Coast Territory prior to him buying the territory, the one thing that aggravated me about the way he looked was, other than Pensacola, every match he had in every town was the same. The opening match was the same in every town except Pensacola, because it was so close to Mobile, people could travel. Same finishes, same everything. See, the Mobile, the Gulf Coast Territory didn't do that. I mean, everything was different. They were literally running 25, 30 different angles and 3 different ends at the same time. Try keeping up with that. Plus the time.
Can I jump in here and say something right quick? I cringed when I would have to go to Birmingham, say on a Monday night, or a Mobile on Tuesday night, or another town, and do announcing at big shows, because you had real, real hardcore fans that would follow everybody around, and it would bother me, just like you said, Michael, to have to go and know that we're going to do the same show in Mobile that we did the night before somewhere else.
Right, right.
And that was, you know, and that was, the, but that was kind of an easy, that, in my opinion, not being derogatory, but just my opinion, we're all entitled to it, that was the easy way out. You set up the lineup and you go with it. But Pensacola, you're absolutely correct. It was the only weekly established town in the territory, not spot show, but weekly, week in and week out, Sunday night town that had a different match from all the rest of the territory.
Yep. Yep.
It stood out.
That it did. Well, you were talking about Harley earlier. You and I had talked a little bit the other day when we were together. You were telling me about the big part in Mobile where they brought Andre in to work Harley. What do you remember about that?
Oh, I remember it killed the town. it was one of those big deals. We went from Expo Hall into the Municipal Auditorium, and best of my remembrance, a house of about 10,000 people. It was close to a sellout in Municipal Auditorium Mobile. And there toward, for years and years, Andre, who was I'm proud to say was a good friend of mine, Andre Rusinov had the biggest heart, not because of his statue of any person I ever knew. He had a love for what he did and a love for the guys he worked with. And he was a very, very unique individual if you got to know him the way some of us got to know him. But on that particular night in Mobile, Alabama, that was a Louis Tillet production. Andre against Harley for the World Heavyweight Championship, which those matches should have never taken place, in my opinion, anyway. You know, on any given night, Andre could sit on all four of us, and we weren't going anywhere. So why? But they did, and they did it with Hogan. But Harley is working as Harley does, and I was always told that Andre called the shot. He was putting Harley over is what Harley was. Harley slammed the giant, got him all the way up and slammed Andre. And from that day forward, it used to be when you brought Andre to any town in your territory, Jerry's seen it through the years, all of you seen it, it was an automatic sellout. Well, from that point on, Bobby Simmons against Michael Norris could draw just as much money as Andre against anybody in Mobile, because those people just, Harley drew like heck from then on, but the giant, Andre didn't mean anything anymore in Mobile. You remember that, Michael?
Oh, yeah.
not only did he slam him, he suplexed him.
Yeah.
And because I was sitting at ringside. the finish of that match. It was a 2 out of 3 fall, wasn't it? Didn't they do 2 out of 3 falls?
Exactly.
And the end of it, they were both disqualified for fighting outside the ring with chairs. I've got a picture of it that I took. In fact, I mentioned to you, I've got a picture of you and Andre in the ring together that I need to get to you.
But I was on stage watching it from the stage, and my mouth just flew open. I could not. The body slam was one thing, and like you said, it was a suplex right after that. And you're sitting there, well, this is all over with. Of course, everybody in the building, they just got quiet. If you'll remember, it got deathly quiet.
Yep.
But Harley, there again, Harley was the man. If anybody deserved it, he did.
Well, I'm going to put you on the spot. Of all the, and I didn't see a whole lot of Continental because I had already moved to Atlanta, and like Larry, I would only catch it on the Odd Pettisino shows that when he would run that 24-hour block or whatever it was he ran in Atlanta, and they would periodically show Continental tapes. But say for the Southeastern days, what was the best angle that, in your opinion, that ever ran?
Well, Bob and I have talked about this a lot, and probably the best angle was involving me, and it was by accident. They tried to make a heel out of Bob for quite some time, and it just was not working. I mean, it did not work. It'd be about a 50-50 mix in the crowd, cheering, booing. So I had been a part of business by this time, about 10 years, and no wrestler had ever touched me. So I came up with a bird brain idea that why don't Bob and I, over a several week period, get some heat going between us, and then let maybe him slap me at the desk and see if that'll turn him into a heel. It was 30 years ago this took place. My firstborn child was in the works, and it just so happened he was born on Friday morning. TV production was the next day, and we had planned it to end up on a certain day that the splat would actually take place, not knowing exactly when the baby was going to be born. But being a local celebrity, it had been on the news, been on radio, TV, newspaper, that I was a proud father of my first child, son, and all this kind of stuff. And the deal with the slap came up first segment of the show. Then I took off, went to the hospital to spend time with wife and baby. Rick Stewart took the rest of the show. And what happened was kind of unbelievable, but we taped the show at like 2:30. It played back at 5:30. And right after, I called every member of my family that I thought might need to know that, hey, this is going to be on TV. Y'all just, I'm okay, you know, this, that, and the other. And so it rocked on, and it plays. And we get a call in the room. Baby's in the room. I'm holding the baby from the assistant administrator of the hospital on Saturday afternoon saying, Mr. Platt, you need to call the TV station. We have a problem. I said, and the problem was, sir, he says, there's so many people calling this hospital to check on you and your child and your wife that it has jammed down the 793 circuit in this market. Nobody can make a phone call anymore if it's a 793 number, and the medical center is 793. Well, I go to a pay phone, call the station, they run a crawl, do not call Southeast Medical Center. We got that taken care of. Then a group of National Guard troop that was grilling, four members of that troop come up to the maternity ward saying, where's Bob Armstrong? We're going to kill him. And long story short, everybody took this thing pretty serious with me being a new papa and everything. And old Bob, the Georgia jaw jacker got his jaws jacked in the whole thing, and it scared him to death because he had folks trying to kill him. And he became the best heel the territory ever had, overnight sensation. It was so bad, so much heat, he got me 2 weeks later to come back to TV and slap him to take some of the heat off.
He was on. He did the show with us several months ago, and he was telling a story, and I'm sure you've heard the story. He was in Mobile after he made that heel turn, and you know, he was always talking about Fannie Mae Tutwiler had bought him this and this and this.
There you go.
He said somehow or another the people in Mobile in Expo Hall had gotten in their head that this particular woman in the audience was Fannie Mae Tutwiler, and they had surrounded her and were going after her, and he had to stop the match he was in, take the microphone, and then announce, Fannie Mae Tutwiler is not in Mobile tonight. That was the only way that he could keep that crowd from lynching that woman. This poor woman's just sitting there trying to enjoy the matches, and the fans have gotten in their head. I guess she was cheering him or something, and gotten in her head that she was Fannie Mae, and they were going to lynch her.
Quick Bob Armstrong story. 2 years ago, I get a call from his wife, Gail, and she says, I got a problem. I said, what's the problem? She says, he will not quit. And said, he'd worked at an independent show over in Mississippi, and somebody had dropped him and hurt his shoulder again. And I said, well, I'll call him. Just, you know, I'll act like I'm just calling, checking on him. So I did, and I said, how you doing, man? Oh, man. I've been in a lot of pain. And I said, Bob, don't you think this time in your life you think about maybe stopping this? He said, you've been talking to Gail. I said, no, man. He said, yeah, you have. He says, and let me tell you how this thing is. I said, okay. He says, come September 9th, I will have been married to her 50 years. He says, and next year, which is 2012 this year, he said, I will have been in the same business for 50 years. He broke in 1962. He says, I'm going to get my 100 years in. I said, well, hell, there's no use for me saying anything to you. I'll leave it alone. And, yes, he is still working limited booking. So, what else can we say about Mr. James, right?
Well, I got a couple more callers here, and I'm sure both you're familiar with, and I'm sure they want to say hi to you. One of them you probably watched as a fan is one of the interns, and then later is the Black Hand, our friend from Mobile, Mr. Joe Turner. Joe, you with us? You there, Joe?
Yeah, I'm here.
Well, let's say hi to Charlie.
Hey, Charlie Platt, how you doing,
man? I'm doing great, Joe Turner. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing pretty good. Just laying here across his bed listening to y'all talk.
He thought of a dozen things that a tortoise to tell since he's been listening to it.
Charlie, do you remember the state senator or whatever he was that used to sit ringside at doping?
It was actually the probate judge, Bob Stembridge.
Oh, was it?
He was a county probate judge, and that was back when wrestling was still on Friday nights in Dothan, correct?
Right.
Okay, that was him. He sat front row ringside, same seat every week.
And he had a girlfriend.
That's right.
I'll tell you a story. One time, he's always ringside, he's always hollering at Bill and I. And so he went to Montgomery at the wrestling commissioner's office and looked up the license to see who the interns were. So one night, I'm getting ahead of the story here. One night he got up there and he called out my name and called out Bill's name. He done found out what it was. I just walked over to his ring and I said, I'll get you back. So anyway, it's about 4 or 5 weeks later, his girlfriend went on vacation and went to see somebody or something. He was there by himself. So I didn't say much to him that night. But anyway, she come back the next week. All I did was just walk over there and say, "Ma'am, I'm glad you're back, because that woman he brought last week was ugly as hell."
Yep.
He never bothered us again.
This is an extra to that story. One night, the same woman you're talking about, this is right after I'm green. I'm just starting ring announcing out there. And if you'll remember, to try to get something going for the territory, they renewed the old feud between the wrestling pro and Dick Dunn. So, pro is in the ring first. And I said, "Ladies and gentlemen, weighing in at 255 pounds from the Southland, parts unknown to the Southland, the wrestling pro." And she screamed to the top of her voice. After the booze stopped, everybody in that building could hear it. She says, "Parts unknown, hell, that's Leon Baxter from Malone, Florida." And I mean, so evidently, she got him to look up every masked wrestler in the world. And if a guy had a hood on, she'd call their name out. You're absolutely correct.
They didn't mess with me anymore.
Well, we're down to about 5 minutes, but I want to get this last person on, Charlie. This will be a voice you ought to recognize right away. You with us, Mr. Smith?
Yes, sir. What are you doing, Charlie Pratt?
Oh, Charlie, you're still with us.
Yes, sir.
That question's up in the air.
Oh, my gosh. What
82
am I
years old. I've been selling Renegade T-shirts for
the night. Man. Hey, I'd recognize that voice in death. I guarantee you. It is
everybody
good to hear your voice, man. How you doing,
yeah,
Charlie?
Pretty good. Just got off work.
Work at age 82. Okay. There's hope for me yet, then, guys.
I've been working at the fair.
Okay.
He's working at the bozo booth. They're throwing softballs at him and dunking him in the water.
Oh, that's a good job for him.
Yeah.
You coming to Mobile? You going to be in Mobile this year?
I've been there every year except for the first one.
I'm going to tell a quick story about the first one of those reunions. And it was great the first year we had that thing, but it was also sad. Andre had planned to come to the first ever Gulf Coast reunion. He had his tickets, his airplane ticket, had everything lined up. And he passed away 2 months before the reunion. And what a big day that would have been for us had we had our old buddy from France with us. But after going through, I want to say this real quick, after going through what I went through this year, in the last 3 months, open heart surgery, there is no way I can describe the importance of letting folks know how much I love them and appreciate them. A lot of folks, including some of the guys I'm talking to now, some of the audience of your show, prayed for me. And this was something that happened on a big scale all over the country. And Sandra has been my wife, has been my protector in all of this. And she told me when I came off the ventilator that they said I wouldn't come off of, she said, "There's one reason you're here, and that's prayer. Don't ever let anybody tell you otherwise." And the importance of having friends and people that care for you, that pray for you, I'm living proof that it works, folks. And being with you on the air tonight, Charlie Smith, great friend for many years, Jerry Oates, Bobby Simmons, always had the utmost respect for. Appreciate so much what you do with your ministry, Bobby. And friendships in the world that we live in, they're hard to come by. If you can get five folks that you know are good friends, they say you're a lucky person. I don't like to say I'm lucky. I'm blessed. And I got a lot of great friends.
Man.
A lot of great friends. And the little reunion here tonight with you guys lifts my spirits even higher. I'm limited on what I can do. I had a lot of damage. But I've had some of the doctors after, some of the ones that didn't think I'd make it, say, does the term miraculous bother you? I said, not a bit. I'll take it every day. And I thank the good Lord for friends like you, and I thank the good Lord for allowing me the privilege of being in a business that most folks, in the words of Merle Haggard's song, I live the kind of life that most men only dream of. And that's what the four of us have done. We have lived a life and worked in a business that most folks only dream of. And we're blessed, and we have a good Lord in heaven to thank for it.
Amen.
Amen. Well, Charlie, I appreciate you doing the show with us. We'll have to have you on again because there is so much more I'm sure we could talk about. For those of you in the Dothan, Wiregrass, southeastern Alabama area, get up, set your alarm clocks for 5:30 each morning. Get up and watch Top of the Morning on WHDN Channel 8 with Charlie Platt. I guarantee you, I have thoroughly enjoyed watching your program every morning. Even considering that you let me be a guest on it yesterday.
isn't that wild, man? Let me say this right quick. Anybody that wants to say hello to us, the email address is simply, it's easy, charlie@wdhn.com. And I'd love to hear from folks. And this has been an honor. Michael, we look forward to working with you next week again. And I'm going to have to come. Sandra and I are going to have to pack up the car and come to Savannah. I want to see a guy from Columbus that turns into a bird watcher, law enforcement officer, riding around in a golf cart on an island. They actually pay him to do it. Now that's the biggest gimmick I've ever heard of in my life.
You got it, brother.
He would give me the job, old. You know it. Hey, he's going to be out there. I heard he wouldn't give me the job.
You know, if he'd give you and I the job as deputies, I think we could take care of it and he could stay at the house.
Oh, yes, stay right. Look at all the girls, you know. I'm a gender.
Benefits.
Charlie, let me ask you something, sir. You talk about Bobby Simmons. My wife pays him, sir, every year to watch after me, you know it.
Where's
Bobby?
I get to go to Mobile, and I get to go to Las Vegas to the Cauliflower Alley every year free because his wife pays me because I have to babysit him.
Well, now, I don't know if it's worth that or not.
What if she's paying you? Not enough.
I can tell you it's not enough.
It's not enough. It's not enough. You guys have a great one. I love every one of you, and best to all of you. When you have any way, you know where to get up with us.
Thanks,
Charlie. Charlie Smith, thank you. Joe Turner, thank you. We'll see. We will be off the air next week. Charlie, in fact, Charlie Platt and I will be at the circus together next Thursday night. So that's WHDN
right.
Night. We're going to put Charlie on an elephant. He won't let me shoot him out of the cannon, but that's Jerry Oates' job.
That's
but anyway,
right.
We'll be back in 2 weeks, and we'll see what kind of trouble we can get in then. Guys, thanks a lot, and good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
For listening to the Tribe Talk, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.